Harry Sargent in BTB refining versus, probably going to ruin this last name, Mohammed Anwar Farad El Sali. Who's arguing for the appellants?
Mark Mitchell, Your Honor, in my partner, Deidre Runberg.
Mr. Mitchell, how do you want to split your time?
15-5 is fine, Your Honor.
Thank you. Good morning. And who's arguing for the appellees?
Nolan Dye and Tony Canales has joined me, Your Honor, but I'll be arguing on behalf of Mr. Al-Sulay.
Thank you. You may start, Mr. Mitchell.
May it please the court.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry that the court has to end with a collection case.
That's okay, that's okay.
After the first two cases that I heard argued. This is a narrow case in which the complaint is that the appellee, Mr. Al-Sulay, did not seek, and the trial court, Judge Stiff, never entered an injunction preserving the status quo of the underlying claims of this case. Instead, he entered what we believe to be an illegal asset freezing injunction against our client BTB Refining in the amount of $22 million on the assumption that Al-Sulay could prove its alter ego claim against BTB at trial. But in that temporary injunction hearing, from which we have both appealed and filed an original mandamus proceeding, the ultimate merits of the case, of course, were not before the court. And in freezing the $22 million of our client's assets, the court did not prohibit illegal conduct of BTB in any way. It really prohibited permissible conduct pending the final outcome of what a jury might have found in the case, and thus freezing $22 million of BTB's assets, a non-judgment debtor.
My understanding, though, and just so you know, I had to do a little flow chart to get your party straight. My understanding, though, is that the evidence they had to prove the temporary injunction of PDF is that they're using the 2009 with the 2013 federal court order that set out the original sale and returned the refinery to Chargent, that found the sale of it during that foreclosure to be fraudulent. And that's why you get BTB at the end.
I don't believe that that's what they're arguing, Your Honor, nor can they. If I can express what I believe is happening. In the case that was tried, and I tried it in front of Judge Ramos, the original BTB case, it was a fraudulent transfer case, and BTB was found not liable of any fraud, nor liable of any fraudulent transfer, nor was Mr. Sargent. Nor was Mr. Sargent found to be an alter ego of anything, despite the repeated representations in the briefing of the case. I have her findings here, and nowhere in these findings and conclusions of law will you find a finding or conclusion of fraud or alter ego against BTB and Mr. Sargent. Nowhere. What she did find was that Mr. Sargent was subject to the jurisdiction of the court under certain principles that this court actually has articulated before in distinguishing the difference between substantive veil piercing and jurisdictional veil piercing. But the appellee conflates those in an attempt to, I guess, make an issue preclusion claim, although it's not briefed that way, that somehow this alter ego finding has already been made, which is not true and not supported in the record. Judge Stiff's order is illegal because of historical precedent, and we rely heavily on the Grupo Mexicano case, where Justice Scalia held that a request to freeze the assets of a non-judgment debtor, that's BTB, that hasn't been proved to owe anything to the appellee, by injunction is historically forbidden against a non-judgment debtor. Here, the district court went even further. It not only froze the assets of a non-judgment debtor, it did so on the preliminary basis that at trial, BTB would be found to be the alter ego of Harry Sargent. So he picked the winner in advance, which has never been the law either federally or in Texas. In fact, if the court would indulge me with a very short quote from Justice Scalia out of the case, we would not be inclined to believe that it is merely a question of procedure of whether a person's unencumbered assets can be frozen by a general creditor claimant before their claims can be vindicated by judgment. We do not question the proposition that equity is flexible, but to accord that type of relief that has never been available before is to invoke a default rule not of flexibility, but of omnipotence. Think about the policy considerations rather.
Let me stop you there. Obviously, in your briefs, you spend little time discussing the Texas Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act. Can you summarize why it does not apply in this case?
Yes, Your Honor. First of all, BTB is not a creditor of the appellee in any way. Second of all, it is not a transferor, and it has transferred no assets. There is no allegation that this $21 million transferred by a non-judgment debtor is going to be fraudulently transferred against the appellee's claims. If you read the court order carefully, which is critical in this case, this court finds only one fraudulent transfer that occurred, and that is the execution of a zero coupon note by BTB in favor of one of Mr. Sargent's other companies, Sargent Marine. The paragraph dealing with the...
Which brings me to another point. Sergeant Marine filed an appeal here, and he dismissed it, and I don't know why. Maybe you can explain it in your argument there. Also, continue.
I can answer that really quickly. Sergeant Marine did not file an appeal. It still has a special appearance that has not yet been ruled on. Harry Sargent, owns 100%, did not file appeal because Harry Sargent's assets are not frozen by what we believe to be the illegal injunction entered by Judge
Schiff. But he did file an original appeal, did he not?
We filed an original appeal, did not file a brief. The other side moved to, I got a call from the clerk asking us, would you please file a motion to dismiss if you're not going to file a brief? We did so, and the other side opposed it without explanation. But the relief that we're seeking is on behalf of BTB.
Okay.
There is the $22 million that is frozen by Judge Stith is referenced in a paragraph that has nothing to do with the TUFTA findings, Your Honor. Nothing in the paragraph that freezes the $22 million regarding the dissipation of assets has any finding that would be supported by TUFTA. It is clear that TUFTA would allow a creditor to come in and say, well, they're about to transfer assets that I have a right, or a debtor is about to transfer assets that I have a right in. What is critical and well briefed in our papers is that there has to be a direct nexus between the assets that are being transferred and the claims of the creditor. There is no nexus between the claims of the creditor here, which are, by the way, a Florida judgment against Mr. Sargent for fraud obtained in 2011, and the assets of BTB. Those assets, as the record will reflect, came out of a $52 million payment to BTB approved by the Federal Bankruptcy Court in Florida when BTB's note and valid lien, as found by Judge Ramos, was paid, when it, and the collateral for that was the refinery here in Corpus, was sold in a bankruptcy reorganization of Trigent. Its debtor, BTB's debtor. Those dollars don't have anything to do. The $52 million came from Gravity Midstream, the purchaser of that refinery, and paid off the valid note and lien. There is absolutely no nexus between that $22 million and the claims of the creditor, and that's critical under TUFTA. So they are not a transferor under TUFTA, nor are they a creditor, a debtor of Al Saleh, nor is there a nexus between the dollars that have been frozen and anything owned. In order to do that, you'd need a constructive trust theory to follow an identifiable race.
Okay, I'm going to stop you because my flow chart got me confused. So are you saying isn't the nexus that Sargent owns BTF refinery nexus enough to get into the judgment that he has now registered in Texas and is obtaining to collect?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. There is no...
Where are you saying that the nexus is missing? I'm still not clear on that.
Okay.
Maybe that'll be a better question.
BTB foreclosed on what had a valid note and lien that it purchased.
Right.
Against the refinery.
Correct.
It foreclosed on the refinery. The refinery was found to be a fraudulent transfer by Judge Ramos, and it went back to Trigent. Judge Ramos said, but BTB, you paid $21 million, I think it was maybe 18 at the time, for this note and lien, and I find it to be valid. Trigent then goes into bankruptcy, and Judge Kimball in Florida says, you do have a valid note and lien. So in the entire reorganization of Trigent, a plan of reorganization was approved. Gravity Midstream buys the refinery, and as part of the global settlement, that money comes back. It has nothing to do with the underlying claims of Al Saleh that he was cheated of money when he was involved in a company owned by Mr. Sargent and another man to bring our troops fuel through Jordan to Iraq. There's absolutely no nexus between that.
But when you're trying to collect against Sargent, what they're trying to do is collect against Sargent on a judgment they have from Florida, and they have filed it now in Texas.
Yes.
Why does the money that they're trying to collect have to go back to that original underlying lawsuit? They're just trying to collect their judgment as to whatever money that Sargent may have, and he's wholly owns BTB Finance. Why do we have to connect that, the underlying nexus back?
Because you have to find, there has to be a final judgment, a final jury finding of alter ego. Alter ego is remedial in nature. It is not a cause of action. They have no claim against the proceeds of BTB. In order for them to get any money, as you say, any money that Sargent may own, they will first have to go through BTB, if that is in BTB's name. And so a preliminary finding...
But if they're making a claim of alter ego and that he's hiding his money at BTB, allegedly, how do we not stop that from proceeding forward in order for him to eventually collect the money? Assuming that there was an alter ego and fraudulent transfer.
It will proceed forward. And they have a right to bring that claim and to prove it at trial. And should they do it, then, and it's sustained, or we post a bond, BTB posts a bond, then they would be entitled to that. But they did not follow the extraordinary remedies of attachment that, and the other extraordinary remedies, sequestration, attachment, garnishment, that the legislature provides for prejudgment relief. Instead, they got a prohibited asset freezing injunction. Okay. This court has faced this before in the Harper versus Powell case, much less complicated factual situation. Man promises in a divorce to pay the college expenses for his daughter. He then inherits his money, and of course he doesn't follow through in paying for his daughter's college education. And the court entered an injunction that he couldn't spend his money. And it was set aside by this court in Harper because there was no nexus between the two, the inherited money and the promise to pay. The same is true here. Mr. Al-Saleh was supposedly, was defrauded, according to the court in Florida, in 2004. BTB was not even established until 2007. And the valid note and lien that Judge Kimball recognized when the refinery was sold is completely and utterly unrelated. I would like to point out, Justice Benavides, that when Mr. Al-Saleh obtained his Florida judgment, he obtained an undifferentiated money judgment. He did not sue for constructive trust, either in Florida or Texas, to try to trace funds to an identifiable race, and then, which would be required to partially answer the Chief Justice's question, to be required in order to attach BTB's funds now, because that is an equitable remedy.
And is this not, we're in the equitable field?
It is not.
I mean, you know, he's hitting it both ways. They brought in the domesticated the judgment from Florida.
Correct.
A sale has happened. They're alleging that there's fraud, that they, you know, he's using a shell to pass all these funds. And so they want to enjoin it, and the judge says, you know what? Maintain status quo. Let's take a look at this baby once we finally, the dust settles.
Grupo, what's wrong with that? Grupo Mexicano, Harper, Rahman, the cases that, De Beers, the cases that we cite, clearly indicate that that's not recognized under law. If that were true, Your Honor, you wouldn't have to jump through the hoops.
They allege fraud, alter ego, and all of that, you know, fraudulent stuff. Up there, you know, for lack of a better word. But.
Well, there's in this case, one of the exceptions to the rule in Grupo Mexicano, which controls this case, and I will tell to the justices that we will live or I guess die by the sword of Grupo Mexicano and its progeny. Grupo Mexicano indicates two exceptions. One, to a prejudgment freezing attachment against someone you don't have a judgment against, injunction. One is if you have an equitable claim, restitution, rescission, disgorgement of profits. And some of the cases so hold. But this is not an equitable claim for two reasons. The only claims they have against BTB, one is TUFTA. They don't even seek avoidance of the note. That's the only equitable claim that exists. They don't seek any relief under TUFTA. And secondly, the alter ego cause of action has held to be not equitable as well. It's remedial in nature. And so the policy considerations of what occurs if one were able to come in and against a third party against whom you have no judgment, you can freeze assets without an equitable claim of constructive trust.
Your first 15 minutes have already passed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me finish my sentence, and you can take a minute off of my next, if I can.
I'll take more than 1 minute, but go ahead.
the equitable claims they could have made in order to do that, they failed to make. And so because they cannot make that nexus, it falls into that group like Harper and like Grupo Mexicano, and it is illegal on its face.
Okay, thank you.
May it please the court, Nola Knight here on behalf of the real party in interest and in these consolidated proceedings, the appellee, Mr. Mohammed Al-Saleh. Members of the panel, there are essentially three substantive categories that I would like to address with the court during my presentation. And as between the choice of BTP, living and dying, based upon Grupo Mexicano, I think each of those three considerations demonstrate that BTB is in fact going to die because of the holding of Grupo Mexicano. It does not stand for the proposition that BTB has suggested, primarily because Grupo Mexicano, by its express terms, is a case that applies to a quote-unquote general creditor, which is defined by the court in Grupo Mexicano to be a person without a judgment. Mr. Al-Saleh has a judgment entered by a Florida court in 2011, domesticated in the court below in 2014.
But he has a judgment against Sargent, not against BTB. So how do we then do the nexus or attach BTB's finances if his judgment is only against Sargent?
Because that is the nature and that is the critical consideration that is informed by the fact that the judgment is already exists. In the post-judgment collection context, this is how the remedial mechanisms operate. As an individual with a judgment in hand, Mr. Al-Saleh can invoke centuries-old remedial tools to, as an initial matter, preserve assets from fraudulent dissipation, and then to ultimately satisfy his pre-existing judgments. So there's nothing unique about the manner in which Mr. Al-Saleh in this matter has employed these mechanisms, to your point, Justice Valdez, to first ensure that the assets aren't dissipated before we can get to a final trial on the merits.
But don't you have a burden to show that there is, i.e., a fraudulent transfer occur or some alter ego? You just can't go freezing what is truly an independent company, because BTP is an independent company of Sargent. It's an LLC. So don't you have the burden to prove at least a prima facie case of this fraudulent transfer before these assets can be frozen?
We did have the burden of proof in the district court, Your Honor, and we satisfied that burden of proof in the context of the temporary injunctive proceedings. And on that score, BTB, in essence, is mounting a wholesale attack on Texas's adoption of the writ of injunction. The very nature of the writ of injunction is that at a preliminary stage in the proceedings, upon precisely the kind of evidentiary showing that you just referred to, if we can carry our burden, then the court is empowered by equity, is empowered by Texas's adoption of the writ of injunction, to enter the provisional relief to preserve the status quo until there can be a final trial on the merits. So we absolutely had the burden. The court below found that we satisfied that burden. And I might add that in this appeal, BTB has waived and forfeited any ability to challenge the factual findings by the lower court in that regard. First, because with very few exceptions, BTB simply didn't object to the evidence propounded to the district court, upon which the court in turn based its factual findings, compounded by the fact that BTB has not in these proceedings raised any points of error with respect to any of the factual findings made by the lower court. So we've satisfied the burden, and the findings that the court made have not been preserved for purposes of this appeal, which in essence fixes the universe of facts before this court. Now, in several months, there will be a final trial on the merits.
Excuse me, counsel, can you please avoid making that noise?
Yes, sir.
It's affecting me. Thank you.
In several months, there will be a final trial on the merits, and perhaps in that context, BTB and Mr. Sargent, for that matter, may challenge the findings that have been made as a provisional matter and that support the relief granted by the lower court. But I reiterate, those issues in this interlocutory appeal have been waived. There are several additional issues that I'd like to take up, particularly with respect to the inordinate amount of attention
that BTB has placed upon the remedial mechanisms of attachment and garnishment, when there's no dispute that here Mr. Al-Saleh requested and the court in turn issued a temporary injunction. There is a conceptual and procedural oddity that is not accounted for in any other briefings or the presentation that you've just heard from BTB's counsel, which is this assumption that if you assume for the sake of argument that attachment or garnishment perhaps may have been a mechanism to preserve the assets at issue here, that that somehow necessarily means it would mutually exclude and be exclusive of the lower court's ability to issue a temporary injunction for purposes of preserving the assets. There's no basis for that assumption under Texas law. The entire suite of asset preservation remedies are complementary. The measure of whether or not a given remedy does or does not apply in the given context is whether or not the prerequisites for that given remedy are satisfied under the facts of a particular case. And to that point, BTB has cited a case in their briefing, I believe it's page 20 through 21 of their mandamus petition, and on page 22 of their appellate brief. It was decided by the Fifth District Court of Appeals, Alliance Royalties LLC v. Booth. BTB contends this case stands for the proposition that if a writ of attachment or injunction might be appropriate in the context, one context, that would necessarily preclude a court from issuing a temporary injunction towards the ends of preventing the fraudulent dissipation of assets. But that's not what the case stands for, nor is there any other independent basis under Texas law for such a finding. In fact, in Booth, on page 497 of the case, the Fifth District was quite careful to make clear that these complementary remedies can be employed based upon the discretion and the circumstances before a given court. And I quote, "In reaching this conclusion, we recognize a trial court has some authority to protect funds when ownership is in dispute beyond the confines of the statutes regarding extraordinary remedies." The very point of this clarification is that the court did not want individuals, as BTB is here, to misconstrue the distinctions courts sometimes make between when a temporary injunction is appropriate to preserve assets versus situations in which attachment or garnishment is appropriate to preserve assets, to instead be construed that they exclude one another. And that brings me to the second issue that I think is particularly pertinent about the inordinate amount of attention that BTB has placed upon the attachment and garnishment remedies. It's not informed or motivated by some sincere desire to assess the potential utility or applicability of attachment or garnishment in this case. It is, to your point, Justice, an attempt to essentially enlist this court into the unwarranted notion that if attachment or garnishment doesn't apply, then there is no remedial mechanism whatsoever.
What I'm catching from the other side is we don't have any jurisdiction. The court doesn't have jurisdiction to do what he did. You know, in essence, you know, that is out of bounds, that this remedy is not available, the equitable remedy of injunction is not available, and there because he doesn't have jurisdiction over this.
If that is what BTB is contending, there's absolutely no basis for that. Centuries of jurisprudence establish that in the post judgment context, someone situated such as Mr. Al-Saleh can invoke equitable remedies to reach and to preserve assets that rightfully should be preserved for purposes of satisfying the judgment. That is the significance of Texas's incorporation of the writ of injunction. There's no claim here, for instance, that the court below didn't have jurisdiction over BTB. There's no claim here that the lower court did not have jurisdiction over Mr. Sargent. So the operation of the remedy unquestionably is designed in situations such as this to be applied in precisely the manner that the lower court applied the remedy. And in fact, BTB has admitted every single factual and legal point with respect to the propriety of the lower court's issuance of the temporary injunction.
Let me ask you this. Have there ever been any events or any other, I guess, decisions rendered out of the Florida court where the issue in this court is mooted it out?
It has not. In fact, Your Honor, that amplifies the importance of the remedy issued by the lower court and that it is operated in precisely the manner it's intended to operate. Because historically, in equity, a person who had a judgment in hand, like Mr. Al-Saleh, who could not satisfy that judgment through conventional means at law, would then bring a separate equitable proceeding, precisely as Mr. Al-Saleh has done in the lower court, and assert remedies such as alter ego or fraudulent transfer claims to satisfy the remedy. And so the import of the Florida proceedings, beyond the obvious fact that those were the proceedings in which the judgment is entered, is that there was no ability to satisfy the judgment through those proceedings, hence this separate equitable action by Mr. Al-Saleh.
The next question that I have for you, is there any evidence in the record which supports the claim that BTB's assets were derived from the dispute from you know, the Florida court?
There is, Your Honor, and I'll come back to that, but I want to clarify a point on that. Okay. With respect to the Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act, the remedies in the act apply not just against a transferor, as BTB suggested, but also with respect to an obligation. By its plain language and in the manner in which courts have interpreted that language, the Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act is intended to prevent precisely the type of collusive scheme that individuals engage in and then try to mask by suggesting the person in possession of the asset is someone other than the transferor. Well, that's precisely why the Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act is not limited in that regard. To emphasize, again, the significance of the equitable nature of the underlying action, Texas courts to this day, as courts have for centuries, refer to an alter ego cause of action and refer to a fraudulent transfer cause of action as being equitable remedy. The significance in that regard, and this particularly amplifies why BTB does in fact die with respect to Grupo Mexicano, because the Grupo Mexicano holding acknowledges that when a person is seeking an equitable remedy, the conventional restrictions and limitations on the type of asset preservation remedies that are available to them in the equitable context are far more broad than they would be in other contexts. In fact, it is universally accepted that the scope of remedies when a person is asserting an equitable cause of action are more broad in that regard, which quite frankly makes it confounding.
So you can't put the cart before the horse, basically, in Mexicano, in that.
Exactly, and we have not here. We definitionally are in the a context in which the court is properly oriented, because we got our judgment. We then file a separate action, as you're allowed to do under Texas law, under theories such as alter ego and fraudulent transfer, to satisfy that judgment. And because that is the sequence in which we're operating, the vast majority of authorities that BTB has cited, both for attachment and garnishment principles, as well as for certain restrictions on asset preservation injunctions, are just flat out irrelevant. We should be looking at the authorities that deal with post-judgment enforcement remedies, the suite of remedies that exist under Texas law, and then assessing whether or not the circumstances for the applicability of any given remedy has been satisfied here. The criteria for a temporary injunction have been. BTB has not preserved, nor on this record do I think that they could make a showing that those criteria have not been satisfied. It therefore is irrelevant that attachment and garnishment in other contexts perhaps might be appropriate, but I will add one of the pernicious components of the argument.
Let me ask you this. Obviously, you know, you can get the wrong company or the wrong person involved. What happened in this case? Say, hey, we had nothing to do with that. You know, BTB is totally a separate corporation in this corporate world. So therefore, we should not be, you know, part of this injunction here.
The trial court found otherwise. After a two-day hearing on the merits, 100 exhibits, supplemental submit legal briefing by the respective parties, the court looked at the record and said, no, quote unquote, BTB is alter ego of Mr. Sargent. Okay. So whatever concerns that there might be in the abstract
matter. So there has been a pre decision that alter ego applies in this case.
For purposes of the provisional relief granted by the court, yes. So this is not an unfair attempt to access or divest someone of assets who's detached from the case. We've had a full evidentiary hearing for writ of injunction purposes, precisely the way that the writ of injunction operates. BTB was heard on that issue. It didn't prevail. At the impending trial of the merits, it may get a second shot, and if it prevails in that context, it prevails. But for now, BTB has not challenged, in many respects has waived, any basis to upset the findings of the lower court in this matter with respect to the propriety of a temporary injunction. For that reason, we respectfully request that the court uphold the injunction. Thank you.
Your Honor, Justice Benavides is correct. Appellee keeps referring to equity in a post-judgment context. There is no judgment against the appellant in this case. There has never been a judgment. We owe them not $1. This is not equity trying to support post-judgment relief against a company that's been operated a refinery for 8+ years. And then finally was able to foreclose this valid note and lien when it was returned. There is no judgment against BTB. It falls out of Grupo. If I can quote one sentence from Judge Scalia on your equitable question, and then two sentences from their briefing. Here's the sentence under Grupo from Judge Scalia, and this is what the appellee does not understand and that this court must understand to understand why this is illegal. Scalia, the preliminary relief available in a suit seeking equitable relief has nothing to do with the preliminary relief in a creditor's bill seeking equitable assistance in the collection of a legal debt. So using alter ego or TUFTA in assistance of the collection of a legal debt is not equitable relief. And Grupo Mexicano says, you have to be asking for equitable relief, constructive trust, precision, restitution, in order to, the Enron case, Newby case, cited in our brief, goes through this as well as the Rahman case. And here's what they say in their plea, in their briefing. Mr. Al-Saleh does not seek damages against BTB in the sense of quantifiable injuries independently caused by BTB and which require further litigation. Mr. Al-Saleh seeks to enforce through equitable doctrines the damage award already issued by the Florida court. Direct quote. That follows Scalia word on word. They are seeking equitable assistance in the collection of a legal debt. Grupo wasn't even an alter ego case. So they conflate what a claim for equitable relief with equitable assistance in the collection of a legal debt. And that's where we're two ships passing in the night. That's where Judge Stith erred. And that is he believed that the only basis for his ruling would have been had they had an action at equity against BTB, but they didn't plead rescission, restitution, constructive trust, disgorgement of profits. These cases lay it out. They're only seeking a remedial action at law, which is alter ego, and an asset freezing injunction does not lie as a matter of law. If that were the case, as noted, there would be no reason for the court to have to there would be no reason to have to prove the extraordinary remedies under the statute. The reason they couldn't prove attachment is that the first requirement of attachment is the existence of a legal debt. BTB doesn't owe them any money. That's why they didn't ask for attachment. They made an end run around the statutory remedies and sought an asset freezing injunction. And that's the basis of the error. The ultimate merits of this case, and counsel just assumes that this is true, the ultimate merits of the alter ego claim were not before Judge Stiff. Reyes holds that in our brief. It was a preliminary injunction. So for him to find alter ego at this stage is of no moment, unless he also finds that they asked for an equitable remedy or had an injunction against BTB, or there was a nexus between the money that BTB holds and Mr. Al-Saleh's debt. Counsel didn't answer the Chief Justice's question about whether there was a nexus between what was in the bank that we won't even get to spend until next May when this case is set, and the claims of his client, because there is no nexus. We don't owe them a debt. There is no nexus. There is absolutely no equitable action against BTB, a non-judgment debtor. Grupo controls completely, and so does NOAC, and this case, and this court's case in Harper as well. We would ask that under either our mandamus or our appeal, that this injunction be vacated and dissolved, and the money returned to BTB. One last statement, if you can indulge me for 30 seconds, Your Honor. I understand the equities that the court cannot, you know, seize in this, but in both Grupo and in NOAC, the court denied the injunctions, but also found that there was an immediate danger of dissipation of assets, that the parties were preferring creditors over another, that the judgment would be lost if the injunction were not entered. And both the state and federal courts held that doesn't matter. That's true in all cases in which you bring a case against somebody, unless you can attach the assets or find yourself under Grupo. The court order finds none of that. It says that the assets will be dissipated, but there is no evidence of that in the record as to the $21 million.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.